his blue eyes gazing at my gloss-covered lips. Would he want to kiss me? I mean, we could never. But would he want to? I blush, shaking my head as I send a quick text to him, telling him to meet me in the atrium in 10 minutes. Pulling the strap of my portable oxygen farther up on my shoulder, I take the quick way, going up the elevator and across the bridge into Building 2, then back down the stairs into the atrium, which takes up the entire back half of the building. I sit down on a bench, gazing around at all the trees and plants, a stone fountain trickling softly behind me. My heart pumps eagerly at the thought of seeing him in just a few short minutes. Excited and anxious, I pull out my phone, checking the time. It's been 10 minutes since my text to Will, and he still isn't here. I send him another text. I'm here. Did you get my message? Where are you? Another 10 minutes goes by. And then another. Maybe he's taking a nap? Or maybe his friends came for a visit and he hasn't gotten a chance to check his phone? I spin around when I hear the door open behind me, smiling, excited to finally see Poe. What is Poe doing here? He looks at me, his face serious.
Will's not coming.
What? I manage to get out. Why isn't he coming?
He doesn't want to see you. He's not coming.
He doesn't want to see me? What? Poe holds out a pack of tissues and I stretch to grab them, frowning in confusion.
He told me to tell you that this little thing between the two of you is over.
The shock and hurt change into anger, deep and real, clawing at my stomach. Why would he sing Abby's song to me before surgery? Why would he sneak into pre-op and risk getting caught? Why would he make me a handmade bouquet of flowers if this little thing between us was over? A frustrated tear rolls down my face and I rip the pack of tissues open. I hate him, I say, wiping my eyes angrily.
No, you don't,
Poe says, leaning against the wall and looking at me. His voice is soft, but matter-of-fact. I laugh, shaking my head. He probably had a good laugh about the crazy control freak in 302, huh? He didn't want to tell me all this himself so he could laugh in my face. How unlike him. I sniff and pause because even though I'm angry, that feels wrong. This doesn't make sense. Is he okay? Did something happen? Poe shakes his head.
No, nothing happened.
He pauses, his eyes traveling to look behind me at the trickling fountain.
Well, let me revise that.
He meets my eyes.
Barb happened.
He tells me about what he overheard in the hallway, how Barb confronted Will about us, how being together would kill the both of us. I don't even let him finish. How long will I live my life afraid of what-ifs? My life revolves around an obsessive regimen and percentages, and given that I was just in surgery, the risk never seems to go down. Every minute of my life is what-if, and it would be no different with Will. But I can already tell one thing. It'll be different without him. I storm past Poe, pushing through the heavy doors and up the stairs and across the bridge to the elevators.
Stella, wait!
He calls after me. But I need to see Will. I need him to tell me that this is what he wants. I pound the elevator button over and over again, but it's taking too long. I look both ways to see Poe coming after me, his face confused. I keep moving to the stairwell, coughing and clutching at my side, the pain from the surgery making my head spin. I push open the door and speed down the stairs. I make it back to our floor, throwing open the double doors and banging on the door to room 315. I glance at the nurse's station, relieved to find it empty.
Will, I gasp, my chest heaving. I'm not leaving until you talk to me.
There's silence, but I know he's in there. Poe's footsteps pound on the floor of the hallway, stopping 6 feet from me.
Stella,
he gasps out, shaking his head, his own chest heaving from trailing after me. I ignore him and knock again, louder this time.
Will!
Go away, Stella,
his voice says through the door. There's a pause, then...
Please.
Please. There's something about the way he says it. A longing, deep and strong. I'm tired of living without really living. I'm tired of wanting things. We can't have a lot of things, but we could have this. I know it.
Will, just open the door so we can talk.
A full minute goes by, but then the door cracks open just enough so that I can see his shadow on the tile floor. When he doesn't come out, I start to step back against the far wall, like I always do.
I'll back up, okay? All the way to the wall. I'll be far enough away.
Tears start to fill my eyes again, and I swallow, forcing them back.
I can't, Stella,
he says softly, and I see his hand grip the doorframe through the crack.
Why not? Will, come on.
He cuts me off, his voice firm.
You know I want to, but I can't.
His voice catches in his throat, and I know. I know in that moment that this little thing between us isn't over. It's just starting. I take a step toward the door, wanting to see him now more than I want to even breathe.
Will.
The door closes in my face, the latch clicking into place. I stare at it, stunned, feeling all the wind get knocked clean out of me.
Maybe it's better this way,
a voice says from behind me. I turn around to see Poe still standing there, his eyes sad but his voice resolute.
No, I shake my head. No. I can figure this out. I have to figure this out, Poe. I just...
My voice trails off and I look down. There has to be a way.
We're not normal, Stell,
Poe says softly.
We don't get to take these kinds of chances.
I whip my head up, glaring at him. Of all the people to be against us. Oh, come on! Not you, too!
Just admit what's really going on here.
He fires back, matching my frustration with his own. We stare at each other and he shakes his head.
Will's a rebel. He's someone who takes risks, just like Abby.
My insides turn to ice. You want to tell me what to do with my life? I shout back. What about yours? You and Tim. You and Rick. Marcus. Michael. His jaw tightens.
Don't go there, Stella.
Oh, I can keep going there. I clap back. They all knew you were sick, and they loved you anyway. But you ran, Poe. Not them. You. Every time. I lower my voice, shaking my head, challenging him. What are you afraid of, Poe?
You don't know what you're talking about,
he shouts back at me, his voice laced with fury, and I know I struck a chord. I take a few steps closer, looking him right in the eye. You've ruined every chance at love that ever came your way, so please keep your advice to yourself. I whirl around, marching off to my room, the air still buzzing with anger. I hear his door slam shut behind me, loud and reverberating all around the hallway. I head into my room and throw my door shut with the same amount of force. I stare at the closed door, my lungs heaving up and down as I struggle to catch my breath. Everything silent except for the hiss of my oxygen and the pounding of my heart. My legs give way, and I slide down onto the floor, every fiber of my body suddenly giving out from the surgery and from Will and from Poe. There has to be a way. There is a way. I just need to figure it out. The next few days blur together. My parents come to visit, separately, and then together again on a Wednesday afternoon, and they're being, if not friendly, at least cordial to each other. I FaceTime Maya and Camila, but only for short bursts of time in between their caboing. I roam the hospital, checking off treatments on my app half-heartedly and going through the motions of my regimen just like I'm supposed to, but it doesn't feel as satisfying. I've never felt more alone. I ignore Poe, Will ignores me, and I keep trying to think of a way to fix this, but nothing comes. Thursday evening, I sit on my bed, googling B. Sapatia for the millionth time, and then there's a clink against my door. I sit up, frowning. What could that be? I walk over and slowly open the door to see a jar resting against the doorframe with a fancy handwritten label, Black Winter Truffles. I bend down, picking it up to see a pink post-it note sitting on top. I peel it off, reading,
"You're right. For once."
Poe. Relief floods through me. I break out into my first real smile in 4 days. Peering down the hallway, I see his door click shut. I grab my phone, dialing his number. He answers in half a ring. "Buy you a donut?" I ask. We meet in the multi-purpose lounge, and I grab him a package of his favorite chocolate mini donuts from the vending machine, tossing them to him on his love seat. He catches them, giving me a look as I buy a pack for myself.
"Thanks."
"Welcome," I say, sitting opposite from him, his eyes like daggers.
"Bitch,"
he shoots back. "Asshole." We grin at each other, our fight officially over. He opens the package, pulling out a donut and taking a bite.
"I am afraid,"
he admits, meeting my eyes.
"You know what someone gets for loving me? They get to help me pay for all my care, and then they watch me die. How is that fair to anyone?"
I listen to him, understanding where he's coming from. I think most people with a terminal illness have struggled with this, with feeling like a burden. I know I've felt like that with my parents more times than I can count, especially these past few months.
"Deductible, meds, hospital stays, surgeries. When I turn 18, no more full coverage."
He takes a deep breath, his voice catching.
"Should that be Michael's problem? Or my family's? It's my sickness, Stella. It's my problem."
A tear rolls down his cheek, and he wipes it quickly away. I lean forward, wanting to comfort him, but as always, I'm 6 feet away. "Hey," I say, giving him a big smile. "Maybe you can get Will to marry you. He's loaded." Poe snorts, his voice teasing.
"He's not picky. He likes you."
I throw a donut at him, hitting him square in the chest. He laughs before his face gets serious again.
"I am sorry about you and Will."
"Me too." I swallow, my eyes focusing on a bulletin board just past his head, filled with papers and notices and a hygiene notice. It's made up of intricate cartoon drawings, each one instructing people on the proper way to hand wash or the correct way to cough in public. I jump up as an idea starts to take shape. My to-do list just grew by one.
Chapter 16. Will. I'd angle my legs off the side of the roof and listen to her voicemail over and over and over again, just to hear her voice on the other end. Her room is dark, except for her desk light, and I can see her furiously typing away on her computer, her long brown hair pulled into a messy bun. What could she be doing this late at night? Is she still thinking about me? I look up, watching as a gentle flurry of snow starts to fall, landing on my cheeks and my eyelids and my forehead. I've been on the roof of dozens of hospitals through the years. I've looked down at the world below and experienced this same feeling at every single one, longing to be walking through the streets or swimming in the ocean or living life in a way I've never really gotten the chance to, wanting something that I couldn't have. But now what I want isn't outside. It's right here, close enough to touch. But I can't. I didn't know it was possible to want something so bad you could feel it in your arms and your legs and in every breath you take. My phone goes off and I look down to see a notification from her app, a tiny pill bottle emoji dancing away. Bedtime meds. I can't even explain why I'm still doing it, but I take one more long look at her and stand, walking over to the stairwell door and grabbing my wallet before it slams shut. I climb slowly down the stairs and back to the third floor, making sure no one is in the hallway before sneaking back in and down to my room. Going over to the med cart, I take my bedtime pills with chocolate pudding, just like she taught me. I stare at the drawing I did earlier of myself as the Grim Reaper, the blade of my scythe reading, "Love." "You still doing okay?" Hope texts me. Sighing, I pull off my hoodie and send a text back, fudging the truth a bit. "Yeah, I'm fine." I set up my G-tube feeding and get into bed. I grab my laptop off my bedside table and open YouTube, clicking solemnly on a suggested video of Stella's that I've already seen, because I am just that pathetic right now. Hope and Jason would not even recognize me. Hitting mute, I watch the way she tucks her hair behind her ear when she's concentrating, and the way she throws her head back when she laughs, and the way she crosses her arms in front of her chest when she's nervous or upset. I watch the way she looks at Abby and her parents, even the way she jokes around with her friends. But most of all, I watch the way that people love her. I see it in more than just her family. I see it in Barb's eyes and Poe's eyes and Julie's eyes. I see it in every doctor and every nurse and every person who comes into her path. Hell, even the comments aren't the garbage fire most YouTube videos get. Soon I can't watch anymore. I close my laptop and shut off my light and lie there in the darkness, feeling every heartbeat in my chest loud and resolute. The next day, I stare out the window, watching the afternoon winter sun slowly near the horizon as the steady vibrating of my Aflo vest thrums away at my chest. I check my phone, surprised to see a text from my mom checking in with me instead of my doctors for the first time since her visit almost 2 weeks ago. "Heard you've been doing your treatments. Glad to see you've come around." Rolling my eyes, I toss my phone onto my bed, coughing a wad of mucus into the bedpan I'm holding. I glance over at my door as an envelope slides underneath it, my name written on the front of it. I know I shouldn't be excited, but I unhook the Aflo vest anyway, jumping up to grab it off the floor. Ripping the envelope open, I pull out a carefully folded piece of paper, opening it up all the way to reveal a cartoon drawing done entirely in crayon. A tall boy with wavy hair is facing a short girl, black crayon labeling them as Will and Stella. I smile as I notice the tiny pink hearts floating above their heads, chuckling at the giant arrow in between reading 5 feet at all times in big bright red letters. She clearly didn't inherit the same art skills as Abby, but it's cute. What exactly is she trying to say? And 5 feet? It's 6, and she knows it. My laptop dings behind me, and I race over to it, swiping my fingers across my trackpad to see a new text from Stella. There's nothing there, except a link to a YouTube video. When I click on it, it takes me to Stella's newest video, posted exactly 3 minutes ago. Be Sapacia, a hypothetical. I smile warily at the title, watching as Stella waves to the camera, her hair in the messy bun I saw last night from the roof, a pile of items carefully laid out on her bed in front of her. "Hi, everyone. So, there's something a little different I want to talk to you about today. Burkholderia sepacia. The risks, the restrictions, the rules of engagement, and how to successfully say it 10 times fast. I mean, come on, that is quite a name." I watch, confused. "All right, so, B. sepacia is a hardy bacterium. It's so adaptive that it actually feeds on penicillin instead of being attacked by it. So our first line of defense is..." She pauses, reaching down to pick up a pocket-sized bottle of liquid and holding it up to the camera. "Calstat, this is not your average Purell. This is hospital-grade hand sanitizer. Apply liberally and often." She snaps on a pair of blue latex gloves, wiggling her fingers to get them comfortably onto her hands. "Next up is good old-fashioned latex gloves. Tried and true and used for protection in..." She looks down, clearing her throat and examining the pile of items on her bed. "All kinds of activities." "All kinds of activities?" I shake my head, a smile creeping onto my face. What is she doing? Next, I watch as she pulls out a handful of surgical masks, hanging one around her neck. "B. sepacia thrives best in saliva or phlegm. A cough can travel 6 feet. A sneeze can travel up to 200 miles per hour, so don't let one fly in mixed company." 200 miles per hour? Wow. Good thing I don't have allergies, or we'd all be done for. "No saliva also means no kissing." She takes a deep breath, looking right at me through the camera. "Ever." I exhale, nodding solemnly. "That's a major bummer. The thought of kissing Stella is..." I shake my head. My heart rate practically triples at just the thought of it. "Our best defense is distance. 6 feet is the golden rule," she says before bending over to pick up a pool cue from next to her bed. "This is 5 feet. 5 feet. I glance over to the cartoon drawing of us, the red bubble letters jumping out at me. 5 feet at all times. Where the hell did she get a pool cue? She holds it out, staring at it with remarkable intensity. "I did a lot of thinking about foot number 6, and to be honest, I got mad." She looks up at the camera. "As sea effers, so much is taken away from us. We live every single day according to treatments, pills." I pace back and forth, listening to her words. "Most of us can't have children. A lot of us never live long enough to try. Only other sea effers know what this feels like, but we're not supposed to fall in love with each other." She stands up, determined. "So after all that CF has stolen from me, from us, I'm stealing something back." She holds up the pool cue defiantly, fighting for every one of us. "I'm stealing 304.8 millimeters, 12 whole inches, 1 fucking foot of space, distance, length." I stare at the video in total admiration. "Cystic fibrosis will steal no more from me. From now on, I am the thief." I swear I hear a cheer somewhere in the distance, rallying in agreement with her. She pauses, looking directly into the camera, looking directly at me. I stand there, stunned, jumping as there's 3 loud knocks on my door. I yank open the door, and there she is, live. "Stella." She holds the pool cue out, the tip of it touching my chest, her full eyebrows rising in challenge. 5 feet apart. Deal?" Exhaling, I shake my head, her speech from the video already making me want to close the space between us and kiss her. "That's going to be hard for me, I'm not gonna lie." She looks at me, her eyes intent. "Just tell me, Will. Are you in?" I don't even hesitate. "So in." "Then be at the atrium. 9 o'clock. And with that, she lowers the pool cue, spinning around and walking back off to her room. I watch her go, feeling excitement overtaking the doubt sitting heavy in the pit of my stomach. I laugh as she holds up the pool cue in victory, like at the end of the Breakfast Club, smiling back at me before going inside room 302. I take a deep breath, nodding. "Cystic fibrosis will steal no more from me."
Chapter 17. Stella. "Why didn't I pack anything nice?" I cry to Poe, who is leaning against the doorway helping me.
I sling pajamas and sweatpants and baggy t-shirts out of my drawers as I desperately search for something to wear tonight. He snorts.
Right, because you usually pack for a hot hospital romance?
I pull out a pair of skimpy, silky boxers, eyeing them. I couldn't. Could I? I mean, it's this or a pair of baggy flannel sweatpants I got as a hand-me-down from Abby. I've got nice legs, right?
Don't even think about it, ho,
he says, giving me a look before the both of us burst out laughing. I think of my friends on their last night in Cabo, and for the first time since I got here, I don't wish I were there. I wish they were here, helping me get ready. If anything, I'm glad I'm not miles away right now. I look over at the clock on my bedside table. 5 o'clock. I have 4 hours to figure something out. I walk through the doors of the atrium, noticing a vase filled with white roses. I snag one, bending the stem until it snaps, and put it behind my ear. Glancing at my reflection in the glass of the door, I smile, nervously giving myself a quick once-over. My hair is down, the front tied back with a ribbon from the pop-up flowers from Will, and I'm wearing the skimpy silk boxers and a tank top, despite Poe's laughter. I look pretty nice, considering I pulled it together from the worst date wardrobe in history. It is nice to know that Will definitely likes me for me. I mean, he's pretty much exclusively seen me in pajamas or a hospital gown, so he clearly isn't in this for my good looks and impeccable fall 2018 hospital collection wardrobe. I fix the blue latex gloves on my hands, double-checking that the CalStat is still hanging off the strap on my portable oxygen. Sitting down on a bench, I look through a side door leading to the children's playroom, a wave of nostalgia hitting me. I used to sneak in here to play with the non-CFers growing up. Well, and Poe. The atrium hasn't changed much through the years. The same tall trees, the same brightly colored flowers, the same tropical fish tank right by the doors where Poe and I got in trouble with Barb for throwing donut crumbs to the fish. The atrium may not have changed much since I've been coming to St. Grace's Hospital, but I sure have. I've had so many firsts at this hospital, it's hard to count them all. My first surgery, my first best friend, my first chocolate milkshake. And now, my first real date. I hear the door slowly creak open, and I peer around the corner to see Will. Over here, I whisper, standing up to hold out the pool cue to him. A huge smile breaks out on his face, and he takes the other end of the pool cue in his gloved hand, a travel-sized bottle of CalStat shoved into his front pocket.
Wow,
he says, his eyes warm as he looks me over, making my heart do somersaults inside my chest. He's wearing a blue plaid flannel that hugs his thin body, making his eyes look an even brighter shade of blue. His hair is neater, combed but still maintaining that messiness that is unbelievably hot.
That's a beautiful rose,
he says, but his eyes are still on my exposed legs, the dip in my silky tank top. I blush, pointing at the rose tucked behind my ear. Oh, this rose? This one? Up here? He pulls his eyes away, giving me a look that no other boy has given me before.
That's the one,
he says, nodding. I tug on the pool cue, and we walk through the atrium toward the main lobby. He looks to the side, noticing the vase full of white roses sitting on the table, his eyes crinkling as he smiles.
You stealing roses, Stella? First a whole foot, and now this?
I laugh, reaching up to touch the rose tucked behind my ear. You got me.
I stole it. He pulls at the other end of the pool cue, shaking his head.
Nah. You gave it a better home.
Chapter 18. Will. I can't take my eyes off her. The red ribbon in her hair, the rose tucked behind her ear, the way she keeps looking at me. I don't feel like any of this is real. I've never felt this way about anyone before, mostly because all my relationships before were centered on living fast and dying young and always leaving for a new hospital. I didn't stay anywhere or with anyone long enough to really fall for anyone. Not that I even would have, given the chance. None of them was Stella. We stop in front of a big tropical fish tank, and it takes everything in me to look away from her at the brightly colored fish behind the glass. My eyes follow an orange and white fish swimming around and around the coral at the bottom of the tank. When I was really little, I used to just stare at these fish, wondering what it would feel like to be able to hold my breath long enough to swim like they do, she says, following my gaze. That surprises me. I knew she'd been coming to St. Grace's for a while, but I didn't know she had been here when she was a little kid. How young? She watches as the fish swims upward before diving back down to the bottom. Dr. Hamid, Barb, and Julie have taken care of me since I was six.
Six? Wow. I can't even imagine being in one place that long.
We walk through the doors into the main lobby, the large staircase looming in front of us. She looks back at me, tugging on the pool cue and nodding to them.
Let's take the stairs.
The stairs? I look at her like she's actually insane. My lungs burn from just the thought of it, as I remember my exhaustion from my trips up to the roof. Not exactly sexy. If she wants this date to last longer than an hour, there's no way we're about to walk up those stairs. Her face breaks into a smile.
I'm kidding.
We roam the almost empty hospital, the hours blurring together as we walk, talking about our family and our friends and everything in between, the pool cue swinging back and forth between us. We head up to the open bridge between buildings 1 and 2 and walk slowly across, craning our necks to look through the glass ceiling at the stormy gray night sky, the snow falling steadily onto the roof of the bridge and all around us. What about your dad? She finally asks, and I shrug. He cut and run when I was little. Having a sick kid wasn't in his plan. She watches my face, trying to see my reaction to those words. It happened so long ago. Sometimes it feels like I'm just telling someone else's story, another person's life that I've memorized. You don't have time for me. I don't have time for you. Simple as that. She moves on when she sees I mean what I'm saying. And your mom? I attempt to hold the door open for her, which is apparently very tricky to do when you're holding a pool cue and need to be 5 feet apart at all times, but I'm a gentleman, damn it. I sigh, giving her the brief, generic response. Beautiful, smart, driven, and focused on me and me alone. She gives me a look that says this isn't going to cut it. After he left, it's like she decided to care enough for two people. Sometimes I feel like she doesn't see me, doesn't know me. She just sees the CF, or now the B-Sapatia.
Have you talked to her about it?
She asks. I shake my head, shrugging the topic away. She's not there enough to listen. She's always dictating, then out the door. But, starting in 2 days, when I'm 18, I make the decisions. She stops short, and I'm yanked back as my end of the pool cue is jerked in her direction.
Hold up. Your birthday is in 2 days?
I smile at her, but she doesn't smile back.
Yep, lucky number 18. Will, she says, stomping her foot, upset. I don't have a present for you.
Can she get any cuter? I tap her leg with the pool cue, but for once I'm not kidding. There's something I actually want.
How about a promise, then?
To stick around for the next one? She looks surprised and then nods.
I promise.
She takes me to the gym, and the motion-activated lights flicker on as she pulls the other end of the pool cue past the exercise gear and to a door in the far corner that I've never bothered to explore before. Looking both ways, she flicks open the lid to a keypad and punches in a code. So you pretty much have the run of the place, huh? I ask as the door unlocks with a click, a green light shining through the keypad. She smirks, giving me a look as she closes the lid. One of the perks of being the teacher's pet. I laugh. Well played. The warmth of the pool deck hits me as we open the door, my laugh echoing around the open space. The room is dim, except for the lights in the pool shining bright as the water ripples around them. We take off our shoes and sit on the edge. The water is cool at first, despite the heat of the room, but slowly warms up as we move our feet back and forth. A comfortable silence settles over us, and I look over at her, a pool cue's length away. So, what do you think happens when we die? She shakes her head, smirking. That's not very sexy first date talk. I laugh, shrugging. Come on, Stella. We're terminal. You have to have thought about it. Well, it is on my to-do list. Of course it is. She looks down at the water, moving her feet in circles. There's one theory I like that says in order to understand death, we have to look at birth. She fidgets with the ribbon in her hair as she talks. So, while we're in the womb, we're living that existence, right? We have no idea that our next existence is just an inch away. She shrugs and looks at me. Well, maybe death is the same. Maybe it's just the next life, an inch away. The next life, an inch away. I frown and think it over. So if the beginning is death, and death is also the end, then what's the real beginning? She raises her thick eyebrows at me, not amused by my riddle. Okay then, Dr. Seuss, why don't you tell me what you think? I shrug and lean back. It's the big sleep, baby. Peace out. Blink. Done and done. She shakes her head. No way. There's no way that Abby just blinked out. I refuse to believe it. I'm silent, watching her, wanting to ask the burning question I've held on to since I figured out Abby died. What happened, I ask, to Abby? Her legs stop circling in the pool, the water still swirling around her calves, but she tells me. She was cliff diving in Arizona, and she landed wrong when she hit the water. Broke her neck and drowned. They said she didn't feel any pain. She meets my gaze, her expression troubled. How could they know, Will? How could they know if she felt pain? She was always there for me when I was in pain, and I wasn't there to do the same. I shake my head. I have to fight all my instincts, which tell me to reach out and take her hand. I don't know what to say. There's just no way to know. She looks back at the water, her eyes glazed over, her mind far away, on top of a cliff in Arizona. I was supposed to be there, but I got sick, just like I always do. She exhales slowly, with effort, her eyes unblinking, focused on a point at the bottom of the pool. I keep imagining it, over and over, wanting to know what she felt or thought. Because I can't know that, she never stops dying for me. I see it over and over and over again. I shake my head, tapping her leg with the pool cue. She blinks, looking over at me, her eyes clearing. Stella, if you had been there, you still wouldn't know. But she died alone, Will, she says, which is something that I can't deny. But we all die alone, don't we? The people we love can't go with us. I think about Hope and Jason, then my mom. I wonder if she'll be more upset to lose me or lose to the disease. Stella swirls her leg in the water. Do you think drowning hurts? Is it scary? A shrug. That's how we're going to go, isn't it? We drown, just without the water. Our own fluids will do the dirty work. I see her shiver out of the corner of my eye and give her a look. I thought you weren't afraid to die. She sighs loudly, looking over at me exasperatedly. I'm not afraid of being dead, but the actual dying part, you know what it feels like? When I stay silent, she keeps talking. You're not afraid of any of it? I swallow my usual instinct to be sarcastic. I want to be real with her. I think about that very last breath, sucking for air, pulling and pulling and getting nothing. I think about my chest muscles ripping and burning, absolutely useless. No air, no nothing, just black. I look at the water rippling around my feet, the detailed image in my head familiar and sinking into the pit of my stomach. I shudder, shrugging and smiling at her. But hey, that's only on Mondays. Otherwise, I don't dwell on it. She reaches out, and I know she wants to take my hand. I know because I want to take hers, too. My heart slows a beat, and I see her freeze halfway, curling her fingers into her palm and lowering her hand. Her eyes meet mine, and they're filled with understanding. She knows that fear. But then she gives me this small smile, and I realize we're here, in spite of all that. Because of her. I fight for a deep breath, watching the glow from the pool as it plays against her collarbone and her neck and her shoulders. God, you're beautiful and brave, I say. It's a crime I can't touch you. I lift the pool cue, wishing more than anything it was my fingertips against her skin. Gently, I trace the end of it up her arm, over the sharp angle of her shoulder, slowly making my way to her neck. She shivers underneath my touch, her eyes locked on mine, a faint red blooming in her cheeks as the pool cue climbs. Your hair, I say, touching where it falls over her shoulders. Your neck, I say, the pool light brightening her skin. Your lips, I say, feeling the dangerous pull of gravity between us, daring me to kiss her. She looks away, suddenly shy. I lied the day we met. I haven't had sex. She takes a breath that's sharp, touching her side as she speaks. I don't want anyone to see me. The scars, the tube. There's nothing sexy about... Everything about you is sexy, I say, cutting her off. She looks at me, and I want her to see it in my face. I mean, look at her. You're perfect. I watch as she pushes the pool cue away, standing, trembling. She reaches for her silk tank top, her eyes fixed on mine as she pulls it slowly off to reveal a black lace bra. She drops the tank top onto the deck of the pool, my jaw going with it. Then she slips down her shorts, stepping carefully out of them and straightening up, inviting me to look. She's knocked the wind right out of me. I try to take in as much as I can, hungrily making my way up and down her body, gazing at her legs and her chest and her hips. The light dances against the raised battle scars on her chest and stomach. Dear God, I manage to get out. I never thought I could be jealous of a pool cue, but I want to feel her skin against mine. She smiles coyly at me before sliding into the pool, going completely under the water. She stares up at me, her long hair fanning out around her like she's a mermaid. I tighten my grip on the pool cue as she comes up, gasping for air. She chuckles. What was that? 5 seconds? 10? I close my mouth, clearing my throat. It could have been a year, for all I know. I wasn't counting. I was staring. Well, I showed you mine, she says, daring me. And I always take a dare. I stand up, unbuttoning my shirt. Now she's the one looking at me. And she doesn't say anything, but her lips are parted, not frowning, not pitying. I walk to the pool steps, sliding out of my pants, and stand there for a moment in just my boxers, the water and Stella calling to me. Slowly, I step into the pool, our eyes locked on each other as we struggle for air. For once, it has nothing to do with our CF. I sink under the water and she follows me, small bubbles floating to the surface as we look at each other across the washed-out world underneath the water, our hair floating up and around us, pulling toward the surface, the lights casting shadows off our thin bodies. We smile at each other, and even though there are a million reasons why I shouldn't Looking at her now, I can't help feeling like I'm falling in love with her.
Chapter 19. Stella. We leave the pool, our hair slowly drying as night turns into early morning. We walk past things I've seen a million times in my years at St. Grace's. Dozing security guards and surgeons angrily shaking the broken vending machine by the lobby. The same white tile floors and the same dimly lit hallways. But everything seems different with Will next to me. It's like seeing everything for the first time. I didn't know it was possible for a person to make old things become new again. We walk slowly past the cafeteria and stand in front of a huge glass window off to the side, away from any passersby, watching the sky slowly lighten. Everything is still quiet on the other side of the glass. My eyes land on the lights at the park in the distance. I take a deep breath and point at them. See those lights? Will nods, looking over at me, his hair slicked back from the pool water.
Yeah. I always look at them when I sit on the roof.
He watches me as I look back at the lights. Every year, Abby and I would go there. She used to call them stars because there are so many. I smile, laughing. My family used to call me Little Star. I hear Abby's voice in my ear, saying my nickname. It hurts, but the pain isn't as sharp. She'd make a wish, and she'd never, ever tell me what it was. She used to joke that if she said it out loud, it would never come true. The tiny pinpoints of light twinkle in the distance, calling out to me, as if Abby is out there now. But I knew. She wished for new lungs for me. I breathe in and out, feeling the ever-present struggle of my lungs to rise and fall, and I wonder what it would be like with new lungs. Lungs that, for a short while, would completely change life as I know it. Lungs that would actually work. Lungs that would let me breathe and let me run and give me more time to really live.
I hope her wish comes true, Will says, and I lean my head on the cold glass, glancing over at him.
I hope my life wasn't for nothing, I say, my own wish on those twinkling lights. He gives me a long look.
Your life is everything, Stella. You affect people more than you know.
He touches his chest, putting his hand over his heart.
I speak from experience.
My breath fogs up the glass of the window, and I reach up, drawing a big heart. We look at each other in the reflection of the glass, and I feel the gravity of him, pulling at me across the open space. It tugs at every single part of me, my chest and my arms and my fingertips. I want to kiss him more than I want absolutely anything. Instead, I lean over, kissing his reflection on the glass. He reaches up slowly, touching his mouth with his fingertips like he felt it, and we turn to face each other. I look over at him as the sun slowly crests the horizon, casting a warm glow onto his face, his eyes bright and filled with something brand new, but somehow familiar. My skin starts to prickle. He takes a small step toward me, his gloved hand sliding slowly up the length of the pool cue, his eyes cautious as my heart begins to race. I move to step closer, to steal back a few more inches, to be just that much nearer to him. But my phone goes off, chirping away over and over, and the magic of the moment floats away like a balloon. I grab my phone from my back pocket and see a text from Poe, feeling a mix of sadness and relief as Will and I pull away from each other.
S.O.S. Barb is looking for you two. Where are you guys?
Oh my God. Panic fills every part of me, and I look up at Will, my eyes wide. If she finds us together, we'll never have a second date. Oh no, Will, Barb's looking for us. What are we going to do? We couldn't be farther from our wing. He looks panicked, too, for a fraction of a second, and then he pulls himself together, his eyebrows furrowing as he goes into full-on damage control mode.
Stella, where will she look for you first?
My mind races. The NICU! The west entrance. Barb will be coming in from the other side. If I book it, I can maybe make it there in time. My head snaps over to the elevators, and I see the doors slowly closing. Grimacing, I lean the pool cue against the wall and bolt for the stairwell as Will books it in the opposite direction, back to our floor. Putting one foot after the other, I chug up the stairs, my arms and legs starting to burn as I drag my body up to the fifth floor. Yanking my portable oxygen farther up on my shoulder, I head down the empty corridor. My feet slap against the floor noisily, my breathing coming in frantic gasps. This is so bad. Barb will kill me. Well, first Will, then definitely me. My lungs feel like they are on fire as I slam my body against the door with a large red 5 printed on it, the west entrance to the NICU swimming into view. I try to suck in as much air as I possibly can, coughing desperately as I flip open a keypad, my hands shaking too much to type in the numbers. I'm going to get caught. I'm too late. I grab my right hand with my left, steadying it enough to type 6-4-2-8. NICU. The door unlocks with a click, and I throw myself onto an empty couch, my head swimming as I slam my eyes shut, pretending to sleep. Not even a second later, the east entrance door bursts open, and I hear footsteps, then smell Barb's perfume as she stops short right next to me. My chest burns as I try to control my breathing, trying desperately to look tranquil while my body yearns for air. I feel a blanket fan out over me and then hear her steps slowly leaving, the east entrance door opening and closing behind her. I sit bolt upright, coughing, my eyes filling with tears as a blinding pain shoots across my chest and all over my body. The pain gradually fades, my vision clearing as my body gets the air it needs. The amount of relief I feel right now is matched only by the amount of adrenaline coursing through my body. I pull out my phone, sending a thumbs up emoji to Will. He responds half a second later with,
"I can't believe we didn't get caught."
I laugh, sinking down into the warm couch, the whirlwind of last night still making my heart float miles above the hospital. There's a knock on my door, jolting me awake from my uncomfortable nap sprawl in the hideous green armchair by the window. I rub my eyes sleepily as I check my phone, squinting at the screen. It's already 1 o'clock, which would explain the 3 million texts from Camila and Maya and Poe asking about how last night went. Last night. I smile at just the thought of it, feeling a wave of happiness overtake me. Standing, I shuffle over to the door and pull it open, confused when there's nobody on the other side. That's odd. Then I look down, noticing a cafeteria milkshake sitting on the floor, a note resting underneath it. Bending down, I pick it up, smiling as I read,
"Poe said you like chocolate. Vanilla is obviously the better flavor, but I'll let it slide because I like you."
He even took the time to draw a cartoon podium with a vanilla ice cream cone beating out chocolate and strawberry for the first place medal. I laugh, looking down the hall to see Will outside his door, wearing a face mask and gloves. He pulls the face mask down and makes a face as Barb rounds the corner. He winks at me and pushes open the door to his room, quickly disappearing inside before she sees him. I hide the milkshake and note behind my back, slapping on a big smile. "Morning, Barb." She looks up from a patient chart, eyeing me suspiciously.
"It's afternoon."
I nod, slowly stepping back inside. "Sure. Right. Afternoon." I gesture with my free hand. "All this snow, you know, makes it hard to tell what time of day it is." I roll my eyes, closing the door before I can say anything more ridiculous. We lie low for the rest of the day so we don't make Barb more suspicious of us. We don't even risk Skyping or texting. I make a big show of reorganizing my med cart, secretly slipping notes under Will's door every time I'm in the hallway to get more supplies. Will heads to the vending machine about a dozen times, his replies coming with every new bag of chips or candy bar.
"When is date number two?"
he writes, and I smile, glancing to my notebook at what I've actually spent my day working on. My plan for his birthday tomorrow.
Chapter 20. Will. I watch my mother sleepily from the edge of my bed as she argues back and forth with Dr. Hamid, as if screaming about it will somehow change the results of my stats. There's been no change from the sevoflomalin. Not exactly the best birthday present. "Maybe there's an adverse drug interaction, something keeping the new drug from working as it should," she fires back, her eyes practically frantic. Dr. Hamid takes a deep breath, shaking her head. "The bacteria in Will's lungs are deeply colonized. Antibiotic penetration into lung tissues requires time for any drug." She points at my daily IV of sevoflomalin. "This drug is no different." My mom takes a deep breath, gripping the edge of my bed. "But if it's not effective..." "Not again. I'm not leaving again." I stand up, cutting her off. "Enough! It's over, Mom. I'm 18 now, remember? I'm not going to any more hospitals." She spins around to look at me, and I can tell she's ready for this moment, her eyes filled with anger. "Sorry I'm ruining your fun by trying to keep you alive, Will. Worst mother of the year, right?" Dr. Hamid slowly backs toward the door, knowing this is her cue to leave. My eyes flick back to my mother, and I glare at her. "You know I'm a lost cause, don't you? You're only making it worse. No treatment is going to save me." "Fine," she fires back. "Let's stop the treatments. Stop spending the money. Stop trying. Then what, Will?" She stares at me, exasperated. "You lie down on a tropical beach and let the tide take you? Something stupid and poetic." She puts her hands on her hips, shaking her head. "Sorry, but I don't live in a fairy tale. I live in the real world, where people solve their..." Her voice trails off, and I take a step forward, raising my eyebrows, daring her to say it. "Problems. Go ahead, Mom. Say it." It's the word that sums up what I've always been to her. She exhales slowly, her eyes softening for the first time in a long time. "You are not a problem, Will. You are my son." "Then be my mom," I shout, my vision going red. "When was the last time you were that, huh?" "Will," she says, taking a step closer to me. "I'm trying to help you. I'm trying to..." "Do you even know me at all? Have you looked at a single one of my drawings? Did you know there's a girl I like? I'll bet you didn't." I shake my head, the rage pouring out of me. "How could you? All you see of me is my fucking disease." I point at all the art books and magazines stacked on my desk. "Who's my favorite artist, Mom? You have no idea, do you? You want a problem to fix? Fix how you look at me." We stare at each other. She swallows, collecting herself and reaching over to take her purse from off the bed, her voice soft and steady. I see you just fine, Will. She leaves, closing the door quietly behind her. Of course she left. I sit down on my bed, frustrated, and look over to see an elaborately wrapped gift, a big red ribbon carefully tied around